You're listening to KRUU 100.1 FM, the voices of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond, grassroots, listener-supported, solar-powered radio broadcasting live from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa. This is Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my co-host, Caroline Kilborn, and we're waiting for our guest to call in for today. Yeah. But so how are you today, Mom?
I'm good. It's a beautiful sunshiny day for solar power, just perfect. And we're very grateful for that. Lots of places in the United States are having a lot of problems, and fortunately we're not. So our thoughts are with those people.
we have beautiful weather here today, that's for sure. But like you said, this morning earthquake in Mexico.
Right. Yeah.
The floodwaters have gone down in Houston. I was talking to someone there yesterday. So they're just rebuilding, recovering. But now...
Some of it's just devastated. I mean,
yeah. Irma is coming.
Yeah.
Has already hit Puerto Rico and St. Martin's and a number of Caribbean islands. Just horrible devastation there. And heading towards Florida as we speak.
Yep.
Wow. Well, Mom, why don't you talk a little bit about what we're going to do today, and I'm going to go and try and find our guest.
Okay. This author, I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, so.
You know, I'm not sure either, but we're going to go with Anna Hamayoun, and we'll correct it once we get her on the line.
All right. She's a noted teen and millennial expert, author, speaker, and educator. Her work focuses on promoting organizational time management, personal purpose, and overall wellness for young people. Sometimes, as she points out in her book, the social media and the whole thing is overwhelming. Her first book, That Crumpled Paper, was due last week, Helping Disorganized and Distracted Boys Succeed in School and Life, quickly became a classic among parents and educators for the pragmatic approach to executive functioning issues. Her next book, The Myth of the Perfect Girl, Helping Our Daughters Find Authentic Success and Happiness in School and Life, explores the real-life dilemmas of young women today and provides strategies for finding authentic success and happiness. It sounds like this lady knows what she's talking about. Her latest book, Social Media Wellness, Helping Teens and Tweens Thrive in an Unbalanced Digital World, decodes the new language of social media socialization and provides practical strategies to encourage better choices online and in real life. So this is a book I would think all parents would want to read, and kids too.
You know, I really hope, you know, I talked to Anna just a minute ago, and she was going to call into the station number, and I don't know if there's an issue with the phones, because I have not heard from her, but... When, you know, I'm looking forward to asking her, you know, are the kids aware that it's a problem?
Well, I don't know, but you know, every teenager that I see is, as my friend used to say, gazing into the little glass screen.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yes. And we all, as you know, as adults and people who did not grow up with the screens, mm-hmm. We think, oh, you know, they're using it way too much. And there's been a lot of research done, and I'm sure Anna has information to share with us about that too. What I'm wondering is, do the tweens are like 10, 11, 12, I think. I'm not exactly sure where it starts, but it's the preteen years. Do they think that they're using it too much, or is it something that it's the adults just trying to get them to change the behavior? I'm guessing yeah. that a lot of them actually are uncomfortable, you know, based on what I've read in this book and the kids that she's worked with, that while some of them are resistant to change, some of them aren't. Some of them really aren't happy with the way things are going right now.
I think there's the phone ringing. Let's hope it's her. Well, this book sounds extremely interesting. I think we'll Learn a lot. And the title of it is Social Media Wellness.
Oh, okay. So,
helping tweens and teens thrive in an unbalanced digital world.
Can you try one more time?
Okay. Now, let me tell you about some of the chapters. And the prologue, The Landscape, What Today's Social Media World Looks Like for Tweens and Teens. The new language of technology and social media, so much has changed, yet so much remains the same. How social media and technology affect the overall educational experience. Now, this is, I was a high school teacher, and so I can't even imagine how it's changed. I've been retired for, 15, 20 years, so I can't even imagine what it's like now. But that's, that's very important for socialization, self-regulation, and safety. These are very important factors. The background, where we've been and where we're going and why it matters. How we got here, the new social media, public profiles, private commentary, messaging, video and live feed, and virtual reality. These are some of the things she covers in the first chapter. So it's
Hi, Anna. Welcome to Writer's Voices.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm gonna try and turn my volume up here. Okay. So can you pronounce your last name for us so we get it right?
How are you?
All right. Okay. And it's interesting because we were having technical difficulties. Anna tried to call into the station number. It wasn't answering.
No.
The phone seems to be working. James just tested it and it worked. But
I don't know. I've literally
No. We're fine. You know what? I think we're okay. And we're just going to do it this way. And let's see. I'm trying to get the mic as close to my phone, cell phone as possible. But it's interesting because, of course, you write about technology and issues with technology.
I've also realized that we become so used to it working that when it doesn't, we're like, wait, what just happened?
Yes. Yeah. Working? Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So James is going to try and help me here. All right. So how did you get involved in this? How did this become your area of specialty, Anna?
Well, so I first started working with teenagers on organization and time management about 16 years ago. And I found that if you help kids organize their time, they would have more free time to figure out what they like to do. And when they first started coming into my office in the Silicon Valley, they would tell me, their biggest distractions were food, sleep, their sibling, their pet, daydreaming. And then about a decade ago, I noticed that their distractions were changing, right? And more things were creeping in from online that were distracting them from getting their work done. And about 6 or 7 years ago, many of the schools, not just in the Bay Area, but nationwide, started bringing tablets and computers into the classroom. And many schools that I started visiting because of my first 2 books on organization and time management and the culture of perfectionism, I was finding that they had the greatest technology and they had all this training around how to use the technology, but they really weren't focused on how to help kids make better decisions online, how to compartmentalize their time. And what we started doing in our office was helping kids manage distractions. And then what I realized in order to do that effectively was I had to learn the language of social media socialization and really speak the language so that teens could, relate to me and know that I was on their side. And so that's how I started working really in-depthly on social media. It came from the organization, time management, and overall wellness perspective. But over the last 5 or 6 years, we've seen how social media has totally changed the landscape of being a tween or teen today.
So, Anna, do you think that, do they think that there's a problem, or is it we adults that think there's a problem and are trying to fix it for them?
I think a lot of times kids recognize that there is an issue when you allow them to be self-aware. And so one of the things that I talk about in this book is called, like, three S's, right? Healthy socialization, effective self-regulation, and overall safety. And one of the major things I think about when I think about healthy socialization is encouraging self-awareness and also encouraging kids to do what I call figure out their why. Why are they going online? Why are they picking up their phone? Is it because they walked into a room and they don't know anyone? Or is it because they're lonely or sad or bored? And when you do that, kids start to recognize when things feel off balance. And so I do think kids will come into my office, tweens and teens, and they'll say, you know, I'm not getting enough sleep, or I'm really irritated, or I feel like I'm never off and able to rest. And then we'll be able to sort of navigate from there that imbalance, because it's different for every person, adult or child.
And how early does this imbalance start?
Oh, well, it just, again, it depends for every child. And when I travel all around the country, I see that kids have access to devices at different ages and different communities, right? So there are some places where people are, like, not until high school, and then there are other places where, you know, kids have cell phones far earlier. And my work is really all about, where do you feel this imbalance? And so it could be as young as 6, 7, 8, 9, or it could be in high school or beyond, but we know that adults feel this sense of imbalance, right? And so my work is all about helping give tweens and teens the tools to make better decisions so they feel healthier, and also giving parents and educators the right, you know, tips on how to have those conversations in a way that's effective. Because a lot of times what's been happening so far is there's a lot of fear-based conversations, like, don't do this because this will happen. And what ends up happening with a lot of teens and tweens is they go online, so they go what I call underground. Mm-hmm. So they're using, like, secret or hidden apps. And so they don't really seek out parental or adult help when something doesn't go as planned, and that's a problem. So we want to focus on wellness and the well-being of our kids. It's really important that we speak the language that they're dealing with right now, and that we help give them guidance when things don't go as planned.
So it isn't just a matter of restricting their access to devices. You really need to know what your kids are doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in terms of effective self-regulation, that second S, it is very hard for adults, right, to self-regulate. We all know somebody who has a hard time staying off their phone.
Oh, yeah.
And it's even harder for tweens and teens who, you know, that prefrontal cortex is not fully developed. So where they are in terms of making good decisions, they might want to get to bed earlier, but that notification is so tempting, or that, you know, can I check one more time to see how many likes I have on that photo? We help kids understand where that temptation comes from, and we also help parents understand that to come from a place of compassion and to help kids build in sort of digital detox is an important part of parenting today. Because a lot of kids, even if they want to self-regulate, they won't. I'll tell you a story. So I interviewed a bunch of teens on camera for the book trailer we created. And in the middle of the video, we had this high school junior, and she says, you know, I should really give my parents my phone at night. I've been arguing with them about it. And she, like, had this realization, in that, like, she was talking to herself. And so what we find is, they think, okay, I should put my phone away at night. Unless someone takes it away or creates that space for them to be off, they sometimes can't do it themselves.
Are there apps that allow parents to control it sort of remotely?
Yeah, there are a lot of different apps that allow for different levels of monitorization. Like, there's one called RPAC. It's a family app where you can turn things on or off remotely. And then there are different ones that are out there. You know, there's a lot coming to market right now. There's also, you know, within the Apple system, or there's different things that you can do to go online. And if you have an Apple Family Share plan, you can sort of restrict when and how things are used. But certainly those do exist. A lot of times people tell me, though, if you simply try and restrict what I'm on or take it away, you don't realize how many devices I might have in my bedroom. And that's why we say it's not just about restricting. It's also about having a conversation and getting kids intrinsic motivation and buy-in. And that's literally been about 15 years of my work, is how do you get kids to buy into making behavioral changes that are promote their own well-being,
wow.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you motivate them to make change? And that's what I do in my office. And that's what we talk about in the book.
Wow. You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Anna Hamayoun, author of Social Media Wellness, Helping Tweens and Teens Thrive in an Unbalanced Digital World. And this is your third book, right?
This is my third book, yeah.
Right. And tell us a little bit about your first two books and how you came to write those books.
Sure. So my first book was called That Crumpled Paper Was Due Last Week, Helping Disorganized and Distracted Boys Succeed in School and Life. And that came about because I had worked with a lot of young men in my office, you know, teens and tween boys, who were incredibly capable. And they would come into my office with literally like 800 pieces of paper that were, you know, at the bottom of their backpack. And we would go through every single piece of paper and create a binder for them. And then over the next 6 or 12 months, they would go from a 2.5 GPA to a 3.7. They would go up so much in their SAT scores that their counselor didn't believe it. But not only that, they would become more confident in their abilities. They would participate in class more. They would try new activities. They were just more vibrant as students and people in their school and greater community. And I was talking to a college dean, and he said, you know, we have a real crisis in boys' education. They're not going to college at the same rate. They're not graduating at the same rate. And I said, oh, I know why. It's all about their backpack. So that's how I came up with the idea for their book. Because now, you know, I started this in 2001. So just 3 weeks ago, I was at a picnic where one of my very first students was there. He now is a father. His wife, their second child is on their way, and he is an attorney at Airbnb, you know, one of the companies in Silicon Valley. And he said to me, he said, I still use that binder system and the stuff you taught me every day in my work. And that is what I hear again and again. So that's really what, you know, catapulted my work around organization and time management. And then my second book was called The Myth of the Perfect Girl. And it's all about the culture of perfectionism and how it affects girls today. And it really is this idea that there's so much content coming at us, right, about how we should be, what we should look like, what we should do next. And what I was hearing from so many girls and women was that nothing they ever did felt good enough. And there were three things that really struck me to make that book a reality. One was that I was having so many high school girls come into my office, and they all had the same activities and the same sort of grades and scores. And I would ask them, what do you like to do for fun? And they would tell me, they would look at me actually with, like, I had three heads. They're like, well, what do you mean fun? I said, well, if you had a day to yourself, what would you do? And they would look at me like, I don't know. And I gave like 7 of them a homework assignment for the summer that they needed to figure out what they like to do for fun. And one of them came back and she was like, you know, I thought I was going to like baking, but there is so much cleanup involved. But I realized that I like playing the piano. Like, but I used to be doing it for competitions, but really just sitting there for 20 minutes for pleasure really relaxes me, right? And then I was interviewing again some college deans, and they said, we are having kids arrive on our doorstep with greater mental health issues than ever before. And I said, well, you know, a lot of this perfectionism sort of lets you never feel like you can be off or like anything is ever good enough. And then at the time I was in my early 30s, and I was seeing a lot of my friends leave their jobs because they said, you know, I never, or be very confused because they said, well, I started down this path because I thought it was the thing I was supposed to be doing. And now like 10 or 12 or 15 years later, I realized I don't even know what I like to do. Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know, what if we started asking tweens and teens earlier to develop what I call their own blueprint for success? So that's how the Myth of the Perfect Goal came about. Mm-hmm. But in that time, I realized that it's not just this culture of perfectionism or the distractions from pets or dogs or whatever. It's also how media and social media have created this new language of socialization. So there's an information overload if we don't know how to filter in and filter out of our experiences. And it can feel very energizing when we have a sense of connection or community online or in real life, but it can also be really draining. And so it became the next thing that I really wanted to talk about, which is how this book came about. And I will tell you, this book was the hardest one by far to write. It took me 4 years, and I rewrote it from scratch for a couple of reasons. One, social media has changed so much just in the 4 years that I had this book contract, but also tablets and computers and coming into the classroom have changed so much. And I wanted to create a book that was timeless. Like my other two books still, you know, parents still refer to them today and use them as resources. And I wanted to create something that had a framework for parents and educators that they could look at for years to come. And this idea of the three S's, the healthy socialization, effective self-regulation, and overall safety really gives a good foundation to talk about social media. So that's sort of the evolution of my work. It's really what are kids dealing with that in some ways no one else is talking about in a way that's practical and prescriptive. Like, what can you do today that can make your life easier?
Well, that there's definitely a need for that. And because it's, you know, it's easy to look around and say, well, and adults have always looked at kids and thought that there was something wrong with them or with the choices that they made. But to have, as a parent, a teacher, or just an interested adult, to have ideas about how to help kids make their own lives better is more important than just diagnosing the problem.
Absolutely. And that's what we found, is that the books are really about how do you talk to your kids. And the interesting thing is one of the things that consistently comes up when parents review the book, and educators do too, is how much attitude and approach, which I talk about in all three books, is important. And particularly in social media, we hear so much social media is good or bad. And I talk in the book that it's not good or bad, it's a new form of communication. And we have to come at it from a perspective that we need to understand the language, come from a place of compassion, and one that we give kids tools to help them start making better decisions. Because they want to make good decisions, but a lot of times, they don't know where to turn for good advice. Parents don't know what's out there. I mean, there was just an article in the New York Times this week about the latest app. And there's a new one out there called Yellow, which has been called Tinder for teens, you know, swipe right or swipe left if you want to be friends with somebody. And it also has this geolocation app, you know, part of it, where you, when you open the app, people know where you are. Well, that's a total safety issue. I guarantee you most parents didn't know that, right? Or, you know, one of my students in our office taught me and showed me her Snapchat Snap Map. So the Snap Map feature, every time you open Snapchat, will tell all of your friends where you are exactly at that moment. That's a big safety,
wow.
And it's pretty hard to turn off. So parents aren't aware of it to have conversations with their kids, not from a fear base, but from a, hey, let's focus on your safety. Let's focus on finding good solutions. And not be like, okay, you can't use any social media because it's all that. So that's just not going to work, right?
Right?
There's some positives that come from that connection online.
Anna, are the makers of these apps thinking about this stuff at all? Are they aware of how dangerous it can be?
Absolutely. And I have to say, you know, in my research for this book, I have met with or emailed or interview people from all the major social media companies. And I have to say, they are all working on creating safer ways for kids to be online, for sure. Many of them, I would say. Many, especially the bigger ones. There was an article, I think in this month's Wire, about Instagram and their founders, about how they are really working to make the internet a nicer place within the Instagram community. And one of the features of like Visco, which is another app that's photo sharing, and Instagram now has this same feature as well, that you can turn off the comments, or you can easily report and block anyone on most of these apps. And these things work. It's just that when you talk to teens and tweens, they'll tell you sometimes if they haven't gotten the education around that they have a choice to opt in, that they have a choice to opt out, that they should identify what's energizing and draining. And they'll often say to you, well, I don't want to report or block anyone. Right? I want to let anyone who wants to follow me, because my follow numbers are important. And these are the ways that when parents and educators understand the language, and that's why I put so much into this book, then they can start having a conversation like, yeah, actually, look at who's following you and decide whether or not you want to include them. You know, think about why are you putting on comments? You know, if you want to share photos, is it about getting comments? And have likes and loves become the new barometer of popularity? And if so, let's talk about that, right? So these are the ways that parents and educators just have to be aware. And most adults, right, they didn't deal with social media as a teenager. They don't know what it's like to be broken up with over text message and then have it blasted over Instagram or whatever. They don't know what that feels like. So it's just a new way of socialization that we sort of all have to adjust to and build tools around.
Is this okay? do teens do they approach this because they don't have personal friends, and so then they're seeking friends on social media? Is that part of the problem?
Yeah, how?
I think it depends. Yeah, you know, so one of the things that's really interesting is I work with a lot of kids who have moved right from one place to another for a number of reasons. I have a number of families that I've worked with that live around the world that are American expats, but I also live in the Silicon Valley where, you know, there are people that are moving in and out. And I've seen the positives of social media where kids stay connected and have community with people they've known for a long time, and that's a positive. I've also, I used this example in the book, there was a young woman who didn't feel like she had a sense of community at school. But she had built a Tumblr account and really felt like she had a community that was positive and social online. And one of the things I talked about in both The Myth of the Perfect Girl and Social Media Wellness is the importance for everybody, but particularly teens and tweens, to find that they have multiple community clusters. And what I mean by that is communities they can turn to for support. What often happens now in our world that feels so segmented is that we have one community. Maybe that's the main school community. But really, when we as adults feel like we are successful and connected, we have multiple communities that we feel like a sense of connectedness to. So for me, it could be my alumni school community from my college or my professional community. People that work in my office give me a sense of community. My family, friends give me a sense. Those are five different, you know, clusters. Some of them, they overlap. And when I talk about online clusters, for some kids, that can be positive. Think about a kid who lives in a rural area who may have issues around identity that they're exploring, or they have different political beliefs than people that live near them, and they want to sort of explore that online. Or one of my close childhood friend had a severe illness and was out of school for 2 years. And she found a community online. She had surgery and all of these things. There was a community online for her that was positive. So I don't think it's necessarily only that kids don't feel like they have social skills to meet people in person, so they're going online. That's why it's much more nuanced. And honestly, as a part of my research for the book, I actually became more supportive of some online communities that are positive because I saw the effect they had. Like I had one time where a girl was asking questions around mental health resources for teenagers in a local community with an anonymous chat room. And there were 9 or 10 people that responded with really positive and really good resources for that person to reach out to. I don't know if that girl would have felt comfortable asking for those resources to a teacher or a counselor or family member, but she was able to get those resources online. And that's another thing we have to, that's why it's so nuanced. It's not, you know, there are times where it could be very positive and get people the help they need, and there are other times where it could be very toxic, as you said, and that might not be the right thing.
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today. And remind me again how to pronounce your last name, Anna.
Hawaiian. So Anna Hawaiian.
Hawaiian. It's kind of like Hawaiian.
You got it.
All right. Anna Hawaiian. And she is the author of Social Media Wellness, Helping Tweens and Teens Thrive in an Unbalanced Digital World.
I would say this book is a must read for parents.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because kids today, like you write about in the book, they've grown up with this. They're so accustomed to devices and technology, most kids. I mean, my granddaughter learned to crawl trying to get to her mother's laptop.
I believe it.
I mean, it's true, right?
Right.
Like my nephew really grabs for the phone at all times, and it's very shiny. You're right.
Yeah.
They grow up in a different way than we do.
By age two, she knew how to use an iPhone, an Android phone, an iPad, a Kindle. She knew the difference between them, and she knew how to search YouTube and find her, what she was really into was surprise eggs videos.
Oh, that's funny.
where kids, yeah, they have these eggs and they break them open and there's toys inside them. And my grandson at about five or six, he wanted to start his own YouTube channel. And but his parents wouldn't let him. But
you know what's really funny though? I don't know about you, but I have found that it's really interesting to see kind of the evolution of a child's brain, right? And how fast they develop and sort of and just like when you think about it with technology. And why I mean that is like my nephew can do things that I kind of look at him and I'm like, oh my gosh, last week, and it's using technology or grabbing the phone or whatever. Where I'm like, wow, you've come a long way in just a week.
Oh, yeah.
Right? In terms of growth and development. And I think it becomes even more clear with technology. As you said, you know, your granddaughter's like, knows what YouTube is and knows how to find her thing. And you're like, before YouTube, would I have known that she had that level of, you know, specialization or identification?
I know.
It's interesting.
But kind of one of the cool things, like when my grandson wanted to do the YouTube channel, it's because he and I made this video together of the story acted out with his little play characters. And we wrote a song to go with it. And he did like the title pages. He would draw pictures and write, you know, by their names and stuff. And we'd film the title pages. So we made so it was very creative and interesting.
It was interactive.
Yes, it was.
And you bring up a really important point, right? So there's actually a lot of research that it's not that you need to never use screens, and this is why I wrote the book around wellness, is that there actually are opportunities, even with younger children, that if you are interacting with them with a screen like you did with the YouTube and creating, there are ways to promote creativity, promote interaction. You know, the research does suggest that it's like less screens, but it's also screen time is all different, right? Interacting or calling grandma via Skype and interacting with her online is very different than just handing the child a device to play with on their own.
Right.
And so, you know, spending the time with them and collaboratively, there's actually benefits that, again, as you said, creating the title page, shooting the video, thinking about all those things.
Yeah.
That's next level thinking. Which is really important.
And he was like five or six. So
right. Yeah.
Now the problem is he's seven going on eight and he loves Minecraft and I'm a total flop so far at learning how to play it. So I've got to get it figured out, you know.
Minecraft is very addictive. Yes, there is a reason why there are communities of Minecraft. I will, you know, you bring up a good point, though. Like, what I always tell parents, grandparents, educators to do is really have kids be your teacher about what they're using, what their friends are using, I always ask, and that's how I got so much of my up-to-date information, right? Just last week, one of my students in my office was like, oh, yeah, you know what we do when we don't want our parents to read our direct messages or DMs? We send them a photo, our friends, we send them a photo over Instagram direct messaging because the photos all self-destruct. So we write the message on the photo, send the photo, my friend looks at the photo, and then the message self-destructs. So when my parents go in to look at the direct messages, there's nothing there. There's just a history that photos were sent. So I'm like, oh, how interesting. This is your next level. But she, really shared it with me. She was like, yeah, let me tell you exactly what I'm doing. See, you can show. And then she showed me on her phone. And I was like, these kids want to tell people, right? It's not like they want the interaction. Or I had another girl. This is actually pretty interesting. I think parents and educators should be aware of it. One of the things that a lot of parents are using are tracking devices so they know where their kids are. And there's a lot of safety reasons that they might do that, and their kids already know that. But what friends are doing are tracking their friends and then shaming them if, two of them hang out together and the others aren't invited. And I've had kids come to my office being like, this is really stressing me out. You know, my friends are following me on an XYZ tracking device. And then if, three of us get together and they're not invited, you get shamed about it or bothered about it. And I look, at your parents know? And they're like, oh, no, we haven't told them. And so that's the kind of thing where I'm sure they want to share because they want to talk about, okay, what are my options here? And, when I talked to that young girl, she was like, I'm just going to opt out. I'm going to take myself off the device so they can't track me. These are next level things that kids are dealing with. Mm-hmm. Not all kids around the country is different in every community, but good things for parents and educators to be aware of. By asking kids, right, and being part of it, like you are with Minecraft, learning how to use Minecraft.
Right. And I bought him a Minecraft Lego set, so we could build that together. And he liked that.
That's awesome. That's terrific.
Yeah. Oh, and we act it out, too. We do live action Minecraft. I'm pretty good at that. There's the Ender Dragon and the zombies and...
And they must love doing that with you, too. It must give you guys quality time together.
It does. It
right?
does. Yes, it does. But I'm not quite up to speed. Up until this year, it was all dinosaurs, and I was pretty good at that. But I was usually the human dinosaur hunter, and he was the dinosaur most of the time.
Do you feel like it's given you, brain challenges, too, though? The Minecraft's pretty brain challenging.
Oh,
it's
yes.
It's, puzzle-oriented.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's like brain calisthenics, I think. When I go along with my students, I'm like, oh, gosh, this is so... interesting, and my brain needs to be fully alert for this. Yeah.
And that's the thing. There is a lot of, the world of tomorrow, a lot of jobs are going to require that familiarity with technology, and you don't want your kids to be left behind either. So how do you walk that line?
Right. And exactly, what I often say, parents are often, when I visited the schools around my first two books, right, parents would often say, are we doing all the right things? And I said, one of the things to really think about is helping kids develop their own values around what's important to them. Because the jobs that exist today didn't exist when they were born. And likely when they're fully adults, if they're 10 or 12 right now, there are going to be jobs that exist then that don't exist right now. So instead of focusing on preparing kids for a specific job that may no longer be there, focus on helping them develop what I call their own blueprint for success, developing their values, helping them build better behavioral habits around healthy socialization, effective self-regulation. Because when you learn the technology, sure, it can be addictive, but also learn the skills on how to regulate yourself so you don't fall into that addiction trap. And then keeping yourself safe at all times. So giving kids that framework will prepare them for whatever the next thing is, whether that's in technology or otherwise.
Now, Anna, there's a lot of press now and then about victims of cyberbullying, and sometimes it's very serious. Do you address that in this book?
Absolutely. So you bring up a really important point around cyberbullying. My opening story in the book is basically what inspired me to write the book. And I had visited a junior high or middle school, 6th, 7th, and 8th, and I had spoken to this class on their very first day of school. And then a week later, I returned to the school, and I was speaking to the parents that night. And one of the girls stopped me in the hallway. She was a 7th grader. And she said, "Thank you so much for your talk last week." And it was so helpful, so much more helpful than I thought it was going to be. And I said, "So what happened? And she, you know, why was it so helpful?" Like, I was really, and she was very, you know, adamant. And she said, "Well, I realized that I have a choice on how I spend my time. And all last year, I was in my room, and my parents thought I was on my homework, doing my homework. But really, I was on this site that allows for people to ask you questions anonymously and make, you know, post comments about you anonymously. And people were saying really mean things, and sometimes at night I couldn't sleep, but you helped me realize I have a choice in how I spend my time." And so that night, after your talk, I went home and I deleted the app. And I was like, "What? Really?" You know, I deleted my profile. And so the reason I say that is, one, I then asked the people in the audience that night how many of the parents were familiar with that site, that app, and literally 2 hands out of 300 went up.
Wow.
So that girl was on it all last the year before. People were saying mean things, and she wasn't turning to anybody. So one of the things I talk about in the book is this idea of who is your kid's crisis PR team. And when kids come into our office, I talk to them about who are their supporters and who are their clarifiers, 3 supporters and 3 clarifiers. And I want them to identify that proactively, and this is what I encourage parents to help their kids do too. If something doesn't go as planned, either in real life or online, like something gets shared, something gets said, whatever, who are the people you can turn to? Supporters, maybe your peers. Clarifiers are adults, maybe a counselor, maybe a parent, maybe a teacher. But identify who those people are in advance. And we know that as kids get older, sometimes they won't want to go to their parent right away for certain things. But we just, as parents, need to make sure that they have somebody to turn to. And then they know who that person is ahead of time, because in the middle of a crisis, everybody feels like they don't have anyone to turn to, especially if you're a teenager, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then also to know about national resources like the crisis text line. We know that only 1/3 of emails get opened, but 100% of text messages get opened, which is why the crisis text line exists, right? You can text into this number, and then a trained volunteer will text you back right away. So all of these resources are helping proactively create a safer environment. Not only that, but help kids understand that they are fully empowered to block and report if something happens that makes them feel uncomfortable. And so those are sort of the foundational work that we do around promoting safety, because we know that there is cyberbullying, and we know that what happens online affects how kids show up in the classroom, affects their mental well-being, affects their social and emotional well-being. But we need to sort of address that proactively before kids even go online. We need to consistently have conversations with them while they're online. So you don't have a situation like that girl who spent a year having people say mean things to her and not turning to anybody. And one more thing I would say about that is parents will always say to me, "Why didn't she just opt out? Why was she on this site?" And what tweens will tell me, junior high particularly, they're still in this place of development where they really care what other people think about them, is that they think that this anonymous, you know, sites and where people can leave anonymous comments, that they'll get a sense of what people really think about them. So whereas adults are like, "I don't really care what people think about me," or I'll just delete that.
Or, "I don't want to know what people really think about me."
Yeah, I don't want to know. Like, please, you know, opt yourself out. Kids are like, "Oh, no, I really want to know. And I feel like if it's anonymous, so be honest." And I'm like, we don't need that much honesty in the world. But anyway, so it's really helping them understand that they have choices in how they opt in and opt out. And that's what I really help parents and educators get the tools around, having those conversations, because they might not know how to do that.
Well, you know, I remember in junior high school, there was this thing where we all had these books that we would get everybody to write in. I can't remember what they were called. Yeah. And some of them, you know, most people would write nice things, but sometimes people would write mean things. And then I remember seeing, I found something of my daughter's who's in her mid-30s now, and from junior high, where they were writing about other kids, and other kids were writing about her and so forth. So I think this has always gone on. It isn't really totally. Anything new.
yeah, no, absolutely. You bring up a great point. It's like, this is why I say social media isn't good or bad. It simply amplifies, in many cases, what's always existed. Yeah. Like, ask any adult woman, and she'll tell you in junior high, somebody rolled their eyes at her and ruined her day, or like made a snide comment, or was like whatever. But now it happens online, or now it can go viral, or now it can get amplified, or there's a bigger audience, right? Someone rolls their eyes at you in the hallway, okay, that makes you feel crappy, but you move on. But if someone says a really mean comment online and 100 people like it, well, that's a problem, right? So that's amplified. And those are the things that we have to help with, the healthy socialization piece. You know, helping kids figure out what's energizing and draining. And even with kids who are doing the mean comments, I find that really having conversations around, you know, what you say to others is a reflection of how you feel about yourself. Mm-hmm. And actually, when I say that, I can see in the audience that kids are really thinking about that comment, you know, that idea. And they're like, whoa, that's uncomfortable. And then it helps them start to intrinsically be like, oh, maybe I need to make some changes. And we see, you know, when I talk to heads of school and principals and all that they see that there's a shift in the culture over time when they start to implement some of the curriculum from all of my books, but particularly including this book, about changing the dynamic of the socialization, because we help bring things to the forefront, not from a don't bully perspective, which is important, but really about, let's talk about feelings, and let's talk about energy, and let's talk about what you're putting out into the world and what you're getting back, and making it all about them rather than saying, just don't do that.
Well, I've always, you know, whenever I run across someone, an adult who is unkind and behaves unkindly, I always try and remember that they must be very unhappy. Because happy people aren't mean to other people.
No.
And even more so, these kids that are doing this bullying must be very unhappy.
Well, that's why we talk about how can we get to that sort of basic level of helping them understand what their values are, helping them identify that, helping them identify interests, ways to find their own sense of purpose earlier. That's been the forefront of my work for the last 16 years, is that when we help kids find purpose really early, we naturally give them things to gravitate towards that makes their overall wellness improve. It improves everything, right? What it was really interesting, after my first book came out, one of the women I interviewed said, you know, I've interviewed, it was Lisa Belkin, she used to write for the New York Times and do stuff on careers, and she said, I've interviewed thousands of people, and the people who love their jobs the most typically started on something they liked to do when they were a kid or a teen. And I said, well, the thing is that a lot of times now with social media and with all these other things, kids don't have time to figure out what they like to do, which makes them irritated. But if we give them that time and that space and that opportunity, they can figure out how they want to engage online and in real life, and then make choices of opting in and opting out. Because you're right, generally people who are mean don't like themselves, for kids and adults.
Well, now, these people, the bullies, and especially something goes viral, as you say, doesn't that give them a feeling of power over whoever they're bullying? I mean, that's part of it, isn't it?
It is. It's this instant gratification, right? It's like a quick hit of feeling good because you did something mean in the moment, but for some kids, right? But the long term is, it's actually pretty draining. And that's what we try and help kids see in the work that we do, and that's what we help parents and educators have those conversations about, really helping them figure out, kids figure out, how can we be more energized, be happier, be more purposeful, and in doing so, get closer to what we want to have in our life, whatever that may be. When you can identify what's important to you and you want to move towards that goal, we can see that when we ask it, okay, are these behavioral choices, including being mean online, is that moving you towards where you want to be, or is it moving you away from where you want to be, right, based on your values that you identify? So we have all these exercises in the book around that. And kids are really good about being self-aware. When you start asking them questions, they're really in the moment. They love doing the values exercise. They love doing it because they love talking about themselves. Developmentally, it's all about them, right? That age.
Right, right.
Really about them and their development. So I'm like, oh, yeah, that's how I get you to buy into this. I make it all about you, right? And so, you know, I was like, I visit schools all around the country and people are like, how are kids so excited about your work or like visiting you in your office? And I'm like, oh my gosh, I make it 100% about them. If it's not other teachers or their parents, about them, I am not here for anything but their benefit. And they're like, oh, well, this woman's all, Sarah's only about me. Great. All into it.
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Anna Hamayan, author of Social Media Wellness, Helping Tweens and Teens Thrive in an Unbalanced Digital World.
So where is this book available? Where can we get this book?
You can get it wherever you buy books online. And if you go to, the cool thing is I really wanted to help parents implement this book and educators. So those who buy a copy of the book, they can always go to my website, and which is AnnaHamayan.com or socialmediawellnessbook.com. And they can put in their information and then get a free ebook, which is like 20 pages filled with exercises on how to implement it. And we have parent, educator, and student versions. So my whole goal with this book, which took me 4 years to write, as I said, is that I want to change the conversation for kids and parents and educators so we have more positive experiences online and we intrinsically motivate kids to make better choices, even when parents aren't watching, right? Because we can't be watching them, and we want to give them the skills to go out into the world and be successful.
You know, the family dynamic has changed so much because very often both parents work. And so there's nobody at home, maybe when they come home from school, and so they're on their own for a little while, and that's maybe where the trouble begins. Yeah. Maybe, I don't know. It's a complicated world, let's face it.
You know, when my daughter was about 11 years old, and I had worked one day, or I always worked, and one day I stayed home and I baked cookies, and I was there when she got home, and I said to her, you know, I'm thinking maybe I should stay home more. And she said, but when would I get to be alone?
Oh, okay.
So there's always more, you know, and the idea really is helping kids make better choices because you're not, even if a parent works or doesn't work, right, there is always that opportunity to go underground too. Like, I don't know if you remember the Harvard case earlier this year where the kids had their offers rescinded after what was they were sharing in private chat rooms. But much of that to me was, you know, kids going underground and thinking that they were hiding out because people had scared them into thinking, oh, if you share something bad, you won't get into college. Oh, that's okay. We'll go behind closed doors or behind a private chat room and really amplify what we're doing rather than having better conversations and not scaring them into going behind closed doors, really having conversations about like choosing how they're interacting based on their in real life values. Because even if parents aren't home all the time, or even if they are, you know, kids always find that way. You know, kids are smart. If they want to do something, they'll do it whether or not you're there 24 hours.
That is determined
with technology.
Now, Anna, we only have a couple minutes left, but this book was published by Corwin, which is a Sage company, and it says it's the premier provider of professional learning products. And so tell me how you got connected with them and how that works as a publisher.
Sure. So actually, my first two books were published by Penguin, Perigee. And then this book actually came about because I wrote an op-ed on teen girls in prom in the San Jose Mercury News. And I wrote how, like, at this local high school, all these girls, at the time, they were using Facebook. Now kids use Instagram for this. They were posting their prom dresses so that no two girls had the same prom dresses. And it was, like, this race to post your prom dress first. And it was all these, like, social manipulations. And these girls were talking about it. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is something definitely to write about. So I wrote about it. And this editor at Sage reached out to me and said, you know, this is really interesting. You know, we thought about writing a book about that. And I thought, oh, okay. So I started, actually, the first draft of this book was really about girls and technology. And truly, one of the things I say is sometimes the best writing comes from rewriting. Because, as we all know as writers, right?
Right.
Because the first draft was actually, I thought, terrible. And we went, you know, my editor read it, and she was, you know, I'm not feeling this book. And I said, I'm not feeling this book either. And then she said, I really love what you have to say about social media. And I'm like, me too. And nobody is saying it. Because, you know, my office is in the heart of Silicon Valley. I have friends who are investors in all these companies, or they're working at all these companies. My office is, you know, 2 miles from Google, 5 miles from Facebook, 6 miles from Apple. So I'm literally in the heart of it, right? And I said, you know, I really feel like the social media piece and technology and classroom has not been talked about. So then I set aside to go write this second draft. And it really came together. I'm really proud of the book because I think it's very useful and it's pragmatic and it's full of tools. But I will tell you, it took way longer. As you know, as a writer, right, you think, oh, this is no big deal. I'm going to, you know, I've outlined it. I go, yeah, things change. And even in the final edits, right, there was one app that went, you know, closed shop in April that I had to, like, change the story in the final edits. And the editor was like, you are kidding, this stuff changes.
Wow.
Like, yeah,
wow.
It really does.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. This is an important topic.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, like Caroline said, it's something every parent, every educator should read. And Mom, do you have some closing words for us today?
Yeah, the world of social media is not impossible to understand. It's like, but there's so much different facets of it, and it changes daily. That is our problem.
And it sounds like that was a quote from you.
Yes, it was.
So, okay, stay tuned now on Friday for Planet Earthwild, and see you next week on Writer's Voices. Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, produced by Monica Hadley and James Moore. Archives available on KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com.